Good evening. I'm Karen Ashby, your moderator for tonight's Telephone Town Hall. I welcome you to this live event and would like to thank everybody for taking time this evening to join us. Tonight, Senator Amanda Cappelletti of the 17th Senate District will take your calls as she discusses how Montgomery County is responding to the changes from the federal administration. Senator Cappelletti will be joined by the Montgomery County Commissioner. And again, as a reminder, if you have a question and would like to join in on this conversation this evening, please press star 3 on your keypad to participate. So without any further delay, let me welcome State Senator Amanda Cappelletti.
Thank you so much, Karen, and thank you to all of the constituents who are joining us this evening. I apologize, we're a little late in getting started, but as many of you might know, there have been some severe weather threats happening, and we took additional precautions to ensure the safety of individuals who are participating, and we hope that you are taking the precautions to make sure you and your loved ones are safe as well. I have a few housekeeping items before we get started. Our new Wynwood office is now open. Our Lower Merion office recently moved from Ardmore to Wynwood, so you can find us at 50 Wynwood Road in Suite 210. The office is on the second floor, and our entrance is in the Wynwood Shopping Plaza next to the Old Navy. If you need an accessible entrance, please call us, and we can direct you to the elevator. You can reach our Wynwood office at 610-896-2832. As always, my staff and I look forward to serving you and the community at this new location. We also have a save the date for you. My office's annual Kids Fair on the 17th will be at the Elmwood Park Zoo on September 2nd from 5:30 to 7:30. So come join us, Team Cappelletti, for a free night of family-focused fun. And while our resources at the event will be geared towards the younger members of our district, you do not need to have a child to attend. So come out and join us at the zoo. And finally, we've heard from so many of you signing up to this event and through phone calls and letters that you want to know what's going on with SEPTA and Harrisburg. While our conversation is going to be focused on how our county is responding to changes in the federal government, it is important that we take some time to talk about the fact that our state budget deadline passed without an agreed-upon budget. Funding SEPTA remains a serious priority, not just for me, but for all of the Senate Democratic Caucus. And my colleagues in the House, well, they passed the bill several times now that we need to make it happen. Senate Republicans are holding out, and I will continue to do my best to keep you updated on where things go from here, but I continue to remain optimistic that this delay will lead to a state budget that reflects our values and invests in our communities in a way that makes a bright future for all of Pennsylvania. So now that we've got those things out of the way, let's get to the real star of tonight. And I say that both in jest and in sincerity because we have Emmy winner, County Commissioner of Montgomery County, Neil Matisha, with us today. Commissioner Matisha, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much, Senator Cappelletti. It's wonderful to be on and great to see so many people joining tonight in the district. And I'm one of your constituents, so thank you for representing me well in Harrisburg.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Matisha. For those of you who don't know, it is true. Commissioner Matisha won two Emmys, if I'm correct, around documentary pieces that you have done on voter education and election security.
Yes. So I'll just say briefly, not that I want to brag about my Emmys on the town hall right away, but it is a really amazing moment last week. We made a film last year really documenting how Montgomery County is leading the way on protecting voting rights and to inspire officials around the country to protect the right to vote. We could talk about all the things we do. It was also meant to combat some of the misinformation that is spread that claims that there's widespread voter fraud, and we've seen over the last two presidential elections. And we published that film in the Times. You can just look it up, Neil Matisha, New York Times. It'll come up pretty easily. But it's a six-minute film. And we won two Emmys, so really glad we have a national platform now to continue to encourage local officials to protect the right to vote.
That is absolutely incredible. What an honor that we have such an advocate with us. And I think that speaks to why you are the right person to talk to about what is happening with the federal budget and what that means for Montgomery County. Because, I mean, most people may not realize the amount of money a county might rely on from the federal government. So could you talk to us a little bit about how much we rely on the federal government and what that money does?
Absolutely. So, look, a lot of the most critical initiatives that take care of the most vulnerable members of our society, whether it's seniors on Social Security or individuals on Medicaid or Medicare, those are federal programs. They cost a lot, but the people receiving them are people who've either paid it forward or are members of our community who are in, you know, dire need of support. And we're seeing really tremendous cuts as a result of this bill that was just passed. So the county, our county, receives about $150 million from the federal government that passes through the state, as well as $50 million in direct grants. So it's about $200 million a year. That's in a third of our operating budget. Our operating budget is about $600 million, and then there's another $600 million in capital budget. So that covers everything from, you know, food for our kids in youth centers, to seniors in need. It's organizations like Laurel House that are providing domestic violence shelters for women. It's workforce development funding. It's drug and alcohol abuse counseling. And it's even work in public safety. So tonight, with this tornado warning, there are people in our emergency operations center at the county who respond to 911 calls. And, you know, they're working hard all the time to keep people safe in Monco. Even funds an anti-terrorism task force. So we got a lot of federal money for many different purposes, and we unfortunately are seeing cuts that we haven't seen, you know, in any recent memory. And just an estimate, in the 4th Congressional District alone, and that's about 75% of the county, about 11,000 people will lose their health insurance coverage through Medicaid. Another 3,000 will lose SNAP benefits. And, you know, when you think about, you know, the purpose of these programs, well, one, people who are, for example, you know, already going to go to the hospital because they have an issue, like, they will be treated because hospitals, you know, they treat people coming in the door. The difference will be that they won't have the insurance to actually pay for the services. And so, you'll see hospitals that are being closed, and we saw in Delco, you know, that happened with Crozier. And, you know, there are a number of community hospitals. I'm in Pottstown right now taking this call, where you could see that happen in Montgomery County and elsewhere, which would, you know, diminish service for everyone, whether you're on Medicaid or not. And, you know, with SNAP, we're talking about food assistance for children, who we just want to make sure are getting a great education at our schools in Monco and, you know, are getting the nutrition that they should have, you know, no matter their circumstance. So, you know, we've got pretty serious concerns, and at the county level, we can make up for some of these things, but not all of them. So, you know, it's very important that we advocate at the state and federal level to make up for it wherever we can.
I mean, that's pretty heavy, some of the things you were talking about, all of the work that the county does with the federal funds. How do you think moving forward, Montgomery County, we're going to continue to work within these confines and concerns about where that money is coming from, but then also thinking about you guys have committed to diversity, equity, and inclusion, and that seems to be an issue in terms of whether or not funding comes. Can you talk about a little bit about your commitment to serving the people with the greatest need and diversity, equity, and inclusion, and how this current administration in Washington, D.C. has impacted the work that you're doing?
So, you know, it's interesting because the administration first came in January, and they said they were only defunding those counties that enact policies that they don't agree with. For example, whether it's DEI or supporting immigrants in our community. The reality is that they're really just defunding everyone. And they wanted to point to policies that counties like ours have had in order to excuse that. But so far, what I can tell you, in terms of, let's say, ICE, for example, no locality is required to engage in immigration enforcement. That is a federal obligation and something that's under federal law. We in Montgomery County are not signing on to enforce immigration laws because, one, even if you talk to people who work in law enforcement, whether it's police or folks in the DA's office, there are people who have been victims of crimes, and they're afraid to come forward because of the immigration consequence. And we actually want people in our communities who are victims of crime, whether it's, women who are victims of domestic abuse. We want them to be able to come forward to the county and know that they can get a protection from abuse order. We want them to be able to come and report a crime. And we can't do that if people think that they're going to be swept away or members of their family are swept away in an ICE raid. And, it's a hard issue because, there are 12 million people in the country who are here without legal status. And by the way, some people have had status and then based on presidential fiat have lost their status. And what we really need is a comprehensive immigration policy that is realistic, that is practical. But instead, we're seeing something that is spending, this new bill has $175 billion in a deportation budget, which is more than the Russian military, and that would be the third largest military, turn ICE into the third largest military. And, just to bring that back to the counties, we're not going to be spending any funds on those programs, even though localities may be required or they engage in that elsewhere. We've got to save all of our money to actually serving our communities, including on the issues of housing and affordability, and that's what we've been focused on.
That's really, really heartening to know that the focus is on the community and not engaging in these types of practices. As a reminder, because I see the number of individuals joining our call continues to grow, please press *3 if you have questions based on anything you're hearing out of myself or Commissioner Nikita, or if you wanna ask questions that relate to how our county government or even state government is working right now within the confines of the current administration and what is what feels a little hectic right now, to be polite about it. Since you talked about immigration and you talked about ICE and your county policies, we have seen unprecedented and frankly horrific actions out of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency over the last 6 months. Montgomery County has been impacted by these targeted raids, especially in Norristown. The mass deportation initiatives are happening. And I'm just wondering, is there anything additional? You talked about focusing on the communities. Is there anything you can talk to me about what the county is doing besides the policy you mentioned to protect our immigrant communities? Is there what specific things we're doing to help keep them safe and let them feel comfortable to, as you said, talk to police or seek assistance in perhaps a domestic violence situation?
Sure. So in Norristown, there's an amazing organization called ACLAMO that's been serving immigrant communities for a very long time. And we actually hired the CEO of ACLAMO, Nelly Jimenez Arvalo, who's just an amazing community leader, to be our first ever Director of Immigrant Affairs. And she is working with a number of community groups like ACLAMO to make sure that people are aware of their rights, are guided to the right resources. And, one of the things that she has advised us on the county is that, if there are ICE requests, we're only going to respond where there's a judicial warrant and there's a level of due process for individuals. So that's a policy that we, as a county, enacted recently. So we're also setting up a rapid response program to ensure families affected by raids get the resources they need. It can be very chaotic when, ICE shows up at a grocery store in Norristown as they have and just, pick people up and people don't know where their family members go. And one thing I would just tell to the folks listening is there are a lot of mixed status households, right? So there are kids who may have members of their family who are undocumented, but they lived here their whole life. They're citizens. They go to the public schools, and you know, it's really hard on families here. But we're finding ways to support in every way we can.
No, to know all of the work that you're doing, and I apologize if I'm overstepping, but I believe, you know, Commissioner Makhija, you've shared before that you are the son of immigrants, correct? So this is a very personal, you know, thing for you, correct?
Look, I don't know if I'm the first commissioner's son of immigrants, but, you know, absolutely I am, and my family came here from a city of 22 million in Mumbai to a town of 5,000 in Carvin County and Jim Thorpe, and Pennsylvania is our home. And, you know, I saw firsthand that, the impact that my father had when people have never met someone from India before on families in our community. And I think it's very much the truth that if someone comes from a place where they let everything go and, you know, they make incredible sacrifices because they want to give their family opportunity, that's very much what the American dream is all about. And mm-hmm. we wouldn't be the same country without immigration.
Absolutely. And I share that because I think we all, you know, we all have an immigrant story. Some of ours is closer than others. I can trace two of my grandparents. One came over from England, and my great-grandparents came over from Italy. So it's a reminder that when we are talking about this, this is a very real thing for so many of us. And to provide that same kind of, support for individuals looking for a better life as they're coming here to America that our families were able to receive and have been the beneficiary of. I just like to remind everybody it's a very personal thing, I think, for all of us, and it should be. One more question as it relates to immigration. At the end of June, the county instituted a new policy on county interactions with federal agencies related to immigration. Can you tell us about this policy change and why it was needed?
I didn't catch you clear. I think you're talking about the recent immigration with policies. So
yeah.
We wrote an op-ed on this, Commissioner Winder and I both, and it's essentially, you know, we want to make it clear to our residents that Montgomery County is not engaging in some of the lawlessness that we've seen with this administration. I mean, they've deported people who are U.S. citizens, right? And we don't want that to happen to somebody in Montgomery County. And so if we are going to work with the federal government, they have to show us that they have a judicial warrant in this regard. And by the way, if you talk to folks in law enforcement in Montgomery County, including our warden, when they decided there's a prison board and the warden decided that they're going to require judicial warrants, they came to that decision because they do that for every other jurisdiction. So if a state comes to us and say they have a warrant for someone for a crime that's committed in another state, we honor that and they show us a judicial warrant, right? So it's really treating the federal government just like we do other jurisdictions. And, you know, in the past, I can't speak to why it was different, but I think a lot of localities, including our neighbors, Delco, Philly, and others, Chester, I believe, also are requiring the same. So this is, you know, a safeguard to make sure that people have due process.
I think that is really wonderful, and I hope everybody understands just how important due process is, and the lack of it is alarming right now from the federal government, because if you don't have the ability to plead your case, you can never say provide the evidence that shows why you're here, what's happening, or if you're even a citizen, and that can then very quickly be turned into something that is utilized in other aspects of the court. So I truly appreciate, Commissioner Makhija, that you guys are thoughtful about due process and doing your best to ensure that the rule of law continues to be upheld. So with that, I know, Commissioner, you have a little bit of a specific time crunch. So I'd like to go ahead and start taking some questions from the audience Karen, is that we've got you for that?
Absolutely. All righty, Senator, our first caller is going to be Alice. Alice, you are live.
Well, I was going to ask about the ICE race, but since he answered so much of that, I would then move on to something else that's been bothering me. And I thank you for defending the rule of law, because, yes, many of us are alarmed and freaked out about what's going on. There are rumors about rigged voting, and I know they said that the network wasn't open, so nothing could have happened with Kamala and the state things, Elon Musk and his little hacker people. But a lot of us are very paranoid about that, and since voting rights is somewhat of your expertise here, we're all worried about it. I mean, how do we know what the Republicans are up to, what Elon Musk and his little Doge people are up to? It's very frightening, and I think we can win in the midterms as long as we know we'll have fair elections. So is there anything being done on that?
So, yeah, let me just answer the initial question, which is, I have no concerns about the results of the last election, right? I think the results are what they were. There's no widespread fraud. There's no issues. No one hacked. Although, by the way, there were like a million intrusion attempts on Montgomery County from hackers in Russia. But attempts. Like, we actually have the cybersecurity infrastructure that keeps things safe, and our system's off the grid. So it is secure, and you can be confident in that. There are other things that did happen in the election that do raise concerns, whether it was the, you know, first ever practices of paying individuals $100, you know, if they voted, essentially, which is what Elon Musk was doing. The DOJ at the time was investigating that. Of course, the DOJ is no longer, enforcing that kind of thing or looking into it. But those kinds of things are a concern. There's a bill in Congress called the SAVE Act, which would require people to have their birth certificate match their voter registration. So if you're one of the 79 million people who changed their name because they've gotten married, that could be a problem, because then you would have to go back and change your birth certificate if you haven't done that, or, you know, get additional documentation. You may not realize that until it's too late to re-register. That bill passed the U.S. House. It did not pass the Senate, thankfully, and hopefully it stays that way. But you know, when it comes to the threats to democracy, that's actually one of the biggest that I've been thinking about. But what's, you know, important is that people continue to have confidence in the system, and you should, and, you know, ensure that, you know, everyone has a chance to vote, where you live, and we're doing that in Montgomery County. We had 82-83% turnout. There's a lot of changes in other parts of the Commonwealth, but Monco actually, had a great turnout last year.
And I'll jump in as the former minority chair of the state government committee, which is where all of these laws around voting rights and voting access go through. And I can assure you that the Department of State is very rigorous about making sure that they are doing all of the unique testing that they need to do to ensure the safe, secure, and free elections. And I would, put money on here in Pennsylvania. Montgomery County did a great job. I also represent Delaware County. They did a great job. But that Pennsylvania as a whole is doing the right thing to ensure that our elections are free and secure and that we have accurate results. So I'm there. I'm with Commissioner Makiza in that we've done a lot of work here locally and across the state to ensure that.
Senator, are we ready for the next caller?
We are.
All righty. Quick reminder, if you would like to ask any questions, please just press *3 on your telephone at any time. We are going to go live with Janet. Janet, you are live.
Yes. Hello. I would like to find a connection, a contact for discussing ICE issues with a specific individual, if that's possible, if there's a phone number or a department that we can call or somebody can call to get information if there should be a problem.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
I would just say, you know, we can't get involved in individual issues, but we can point you to resources that could include legal counsel for any individual if that's what you're asking. I don't know if Janet is still live.
Yeah. Hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes. How does one get in touch with that department?
We will give you a call. We have your number. We see it right here. And, we can put you in touch. But basically, for anyone online who has the same question, there's an Immigrant Resource Center online in the Monco PA page. Part of our Director of Immigrant Affairs work is she set that up, so you can find resources there, including legal counsel.
Senator, would you like to go live with the next caller?
We sure can.
All righty. We're going to go live with Sharon. Sharon, you're live.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call. I just wanted to share something with you. My daughter is a Head Start teacher in Bucks County, and she has her master's plus 30 in Chestnut Hill. So she went to a very good school, and it's given up a lot of money to stay in the Head Start program because she loves the children. And last week, a parent called her and told her child would not be at school that day and probably not for several days because the immigrant people, the representatives were on her block, and they were afraid to take her to school, even though they're legal. So that's what's happening in our country. I'm embarrassed. I'm ashamed because my grandparents came from Russia. But I just want people to understand it's not just what you see, it's what you don't see. It's parents hiding in their houses with a special needs child for several days. She couldn't go to school because immigration was on her block. This is what we're doing to the immigrants that are here legally. And I don't think there's enough publicity about that, that legal immigrants are afraid to come out of their houses when immigration is around. And I just wanted to share that with you because my daughter had a really hard time trying to put that in perspective of what this country is supposed to be like.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. That is heartbreaking, and I think speaks to some of the points Commissioner Makhija was making, that the importance of due process in this situation, because individuals who do have documentation status, who have gained citizenship, need and should have the opportunity not only to provide it, but to be here without fear of being profiled because of the color of their skin or how they might look for some reason. So that is an incredibly heartbreaking story and not an unusual one, unfortunately. I've heard similar stories from others. Thank you so much for sharing. Karen, we can take the next caller.
All righty. We are going to go live with Anna.
Hi, I think that's me. Thanks so much for doing this. It's super interesting listening in and hearing all of this, and I think this is a great forum to participate, so I appreciate it. I think a lot of us can probably agree that government spending is out of control, and so I know that the federal reconciliation bill had Medicaid reforms that you talked about earlier, which included a work requirement for specific individuals. I know there were exclusions for parents, for people with disabilities, caregivers, things like that, which I think is really important. Was curious to get your take on the work requirement provision that was included in that.
So I'll start. I think I'm a little hesitant to support some of these additional requirements. What isn't necessarily discussed is all of the work requirements from the various programs that we already have that are already in place and how onerous many of them are. There are things that can be done and changes to Medicaid that can be made in the program that can help curb spending without putting onerous requirements on individuals receiving support through the programs. So I am certainly understanding that government spending needs to be reined in, but I think there are probably smarter ways and better ways that we can do this rather than really digging in on kind of the old trope that people who use government services are lazy, and that's kind of how that comes across and plays. And I think that when we talk to individuals who are using the services, as are often those who come into my office, we find that that's not the case, and that there are other difficulties that are there, it's been hard to find a job, or there are many other things that are going into it. So I just think that there are probably better ways, thinking through with my master's of public health background, what that could look like and the changes that are actually made in the way that Medicaid is, the policies are written and utilized.
I'll just add to that. Look, the United States is the only wealthy country that doesn't have universal health care, that there are people who are uninsured, and adding work requirements is odd because, you know, I don't know anyone who says, I don't want a job because I'd rather get Medicaid, right? It's not like we're going to incentivize people to work by taking away their Medicaid and adding the requirement. People, so, you know, oftentimes we're talking about, people making significant, or people who have significant needs, in terms of, I mean, just think about the basic cost of living right now. It's nearly impossible to buy your first home if you want to be a homeowner. The inflation has made, you know, basic necessities of food, you know, costs have, you know, gone up significantly in the last 5 years alone. It's a very different environment than, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, when you could have one person in the household having a job. Now you have two, and those things are still unaffordable. So, you know, Medicaid is there as a safety net to make sure that more people are insured so that they don't, you know, fall into, you know, an even worse place if they encounter a health issue. And we have 500 people who are homeless in the county, many of whom are no fault of their own. Some of them could be medical issues that, out of their control. And I think, my take is just we should have a society that provides that basic right to health care like, you know, most other wealthy countries, almost all of them have. So, you know, the work requirements are a way to save $1 trillion, which is what they did, but they also gave $5 trillion in tax cuts, mostly to the wealthiest Americans. And so there's really a redistribution that happened in this bill, which is to take away a service that was, you know, amongst the most vulnerable and to provide tax cuts to the wealthiest. And look, Lower Merion and many parts of the district are doing well. Most people that I talk to still want, you know, their friends and neighbors to have access to health care. So, you know, that's where I land. Of course, as a county commissioner, I'm here to just implement, you know, the programs that we do have, but I do see it in a real need in our county, and 10,000 people losing insurance will have ripple effects.
All righty. Ready for the next caller, Senator?
Yes.
All righty. We are going to go live with Scott. Scott, you're live.
Thank you. So my question goes into the Medicaid and other services that have been curtailed, and you come up with, you know, a number of people that affect. What is the actual math for that? Like, who exactly is being removed and why? There must be some data behind those numbers. How do I find that?
I believe, because you might know as well, former Montgomery County Commissioner Dr. Valerie Cush is currently our Secretary of Human Services in Pennsylvania. And her department, the Department of Human Services, oversees and implements Medicaid in Pennsylvania. So they have all of the data and figures and are able to run based on the documentation provided by individuals who will still be eligible for the program versus who is not. And there is indeed a website. I just don't recall it off the top of my head. But they do have a website that provides that information of how many people currently use Medicaid. And you can parse it out in a variety of different ways, Montgomery County, by congressional district, how many people currently use Medicaid and how those people may or may not continue to receive access to health care after these changes are implemented.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you can also, the Congressional Budget Office and, other entities like that will do scores, and the way they pass the bill is by coming up with these estimates. So none of them are perfect, but it's certainly significant if they're planning on saving $1 trillion in healthcare costs. So the number that I shared was by the congressional district, which was 10,000, but it could be it could be more, it could be less.
Senator, are you ready for the next caller?
Give me one second, Karen. I am going to check in. I know, Commissioner McKee, that we got started a little late. However, I'm grateful for you giving us your time this evening. I do know you had another event that was set to start, I believe, at 6:30. So I just want to double check. How are we doing on time?
I have time for one more question.
All right, Karen, you heard the man. One more question.
All righty. We're going to go live with Melanie.
Hello. Thank you for having this town hall. Those were great answers to those questions. My question was about the illegal ICE activities going on in the United States, and I anticipate will be coming to our area soon. Number one, I was wondering if there was any effort to work with local law enforcement, basically to be a resource to citizens when they're being harassed by ICE, because if someone who's masked and who does not present proper ID or warrant is trying to throw you into a van, we should be able to call 911 for assistance. So how is our local law enforcement being trained to intervene in those cases? And also, are you doing inspections of ICE facilities in our area?
So there are no ICE detention centers in Montgomery County. There may have been a time years ago in which there was some of that, but none of our county facilities are being used for ICE. In terms of your question of what else can happen with local police, what I would encourage folks is to talk to their township officials who govern the municipal police department, and they're able to take the same kind of action that the county does in terms of requiring a warrant, and they can train officers on how to handle or how they should handle these situations, and be really helpful in terms of the overall public safety of the community. So there's a number of resources out there and folks who are talking to township officials about enacting these, so I'd encourage you to talk to your, if you're a lower Marion, or I think that's who you are, talk to your township commissioners in terms of local police. And, Amanda, if you have anything you want to add, and other than that, I said this was the last question, but maybe we could just do a short closing on what else is coming up. I think that would be helpful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head, Neil. Ultimately, when it comes to ICE, working in conjunction with ICE, that becomes who coordinates or oversees the law enforcement agencies, and that's your local officials. We have county level, and as you've heard from the county level and the sheriff's office, there is no directive to work with them without these very specific legal documents necessary to enforce any action. So That is the best thing that you can do. And I can say from the perspective of as a former township supervisor, you know, we work with our law enforcement to decriminalize marijuana in our community, and it is the same principle. My township supervisors, as well as others, would work with the police department to direct them, do not comply with ICE without the very specific judicial warrant legal papers that are needed. So if you have concerns in your community, please reach out to those individuals. You need help finding those individuals, you can reach out to me. Our office is always happy to help you find how to connect to other parts of the government. So I just want to say thank you, Commissioner Mateza, Neil, for really taking the time to talk with the people about what Montgomery County is doing during this really tenuous moment in history.
So thank you, and thank you for your leadership in Harrisburg, because I know there are going to be a lot of conversations there in terms of the state budget and how we can, you know, best support our communities when we're seeing a loss of funding that's significant. And, you know, and for anyone who's listening on the SEPTA issue, Senator Capilotti has been a great champion. I serve on the SEPTA board. I want a future where we have service every 15 minutes, and you know, I hope after we get past this budget where we fund the basics of SEPTA and, you know, protect our regional rail lines, we can think about, you know, a future where we actually increase service and support that. So I would just encourage everyone to stay engaged. And, you know, I see a couple of questions up here that we haven't had the time to get up to in terms of SNAP and school lunch, and I would encourage everyone to, you know, support local nonprofits. There's a lot of great ones. Mana and Lansdale, I'm going to be visiting this week. There's a food pantry in Upper Marion. Missing the name. You probably know it, Senator. They do an amazing job in the church.
Upper Marion Community
Suburbs.
Yep.
Marbury Street.
And we do happen to have Gigi, the founder, on the line for this as well.
Okay, great. Thank you, Gigi, for your work. It's never been more important. So, you know, really appreciate everything that you're doing. And, you know, I see you had a question we didn't get to, but is Section 8 housing included in this budget? So there are going to be a lot of cuts expected to HUD and the housing. They're not in this bill. It's going to be in the budget bill, which comes separately. But that is, you know, another thing that we're bracing for, because, you know, there's so many critical services that HUD funds through its, you know, community development block grants and other programs, including, you know, Section 8 program, that, you know, we have to, you know, we really have to advocate when that bill comes around. And what I would also just say is, you know, this bill passed, meaning it got to the Senate with one vote in the U.S. House. Your members of Congress should hear from you on this subject, you know, and all the things that we're talking about.
No, absolutely. Look, I think that's the best point of all of this, Commissioner Mateza and Neil, that every vote matters, right? Your vote matters. You have individuals who are serving in office that have won those seats with less than 50 votes their first time around, right? Your vote matters, your elected officials matter, and you're seeing the way that plays out. So whether you're frustrated or happy about what is happening, you need to make sure that we hold our elected officials accountable and that they know where you stand. We appreciate that you were taking the time to talk to us this evening. We want to make sure we're doing the best job we can to represent this beautiful, diverse community in Montgomery County. So thank you. Thank you all so much. This has been an incredible conversation. I don't want to keep you too long, Commissioner. I know you've got a busy schedule this evening. So to everyone that is on the line, I want to thank you for those who just listened and for those who have given us questions and suggestions. And if you didn't have a chance to ask your question, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for me, and we will get back to you. So I want to say thank you again for your participation as constituents and to the commissioner. And if you have any additional questions or concerns, please call my office at 610-768-4200. Or you can visit my website, pasenatorcapoletti.com. Thank you, everyone. Good night.